Call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. It is 3:17. Members present are Representatives Carrick, Freer, Fields, and Hall. Thanks, Andrew Magnuson, Renzo Moises for tech and teleconferencing support. We have two bills on the agenda, House Bill 347, Occupational Therapists and Assistants. It's a committee bill, and HJR 38, Public Safety Communications. First up, House Bill 347, Occupational Therapists and Assistants by the committee. Thanks, Co-Chair Hall and staff, for presenting this bill.
Can we have a brief at ease, please, Mr. Chair?
Brief at ease. Thank you. On the record, House Bill 347. Thank you, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present this committee bill to the House Labor and Commerce Committee. The topic is occupational therapy. Occupational therapy care helps people whose ability to participate in the activities of daily living is impeded by disability or pain caused by illness, birth defect, aging, or injury. Whereas physical therapy focuses on improving mobility, strength, and range of motion to restore physical function, occupational therapy helps patients gain independence in performing daily life tasks such as dressing, eating, or working by adapting tasks and environments. Alaska State Chapter 84 currently describes the scope of practice of physical therapists, but provides limited reference to what an occupational therapist does, describing their function as to help patients, quote, cope. HB 347 provides a scope of practice for occupational therapists, incorporating established clinical practice, educational, and national standards. Without this update, Alaskans are at risk to receive a narrower level of care defined by outdated wording rather than by modern standards of practice. We worked closely with Alaskan occupational therapists to tailor this bill to describe how occupational therapists not only help patients adjust, but also restore, rehabilitate, and enhance function after a change in their physical capabilities. The bill does not expand the scope of practice beyond national norms. It provides clear scope language intended to improve access and timeliness of care by removing ambiguity that can slow referrals and treatment. Expediting the referral process can hasten rehabilitation after surgery or stroke. HB 347 is a practical modernization of Alaska's occupational therapy statute that will strengthen the ability of Alaskans to remain safe and independent in their homes, schools, workplaces, and communities. And Mr. Co-Chair, I believe I neglected at the beginning to put myself on the record. My name is Carolyn Hall, representing HD 16 West Anchorage. Additionally, one more comment, Mr. Co-Chair, the occupational therapists have gone through extensive stakeholder engagement with other groups, such as the Physical Therapy Association for the state. And so this has really been a collaborative process to ensure that everybody's on the same page and to make sure that there's no perhaps scope creep, as an example. So with that, Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my Chief of Staff, John Wilkerson, for the sectional.
Through the chair, Joan Wilkerson, Chief of Staff for Representative Carolyn Hall. Sectional analysis for HB 347. Section 1 has a scope of practice for occupational therapists and occupational therapy assistants under AS 0884095, describing the people who need care as those whose ability to participate in activities of daily living are restricted because of having or being at risk of having an injury or impairment that limits the ability to participate in an occupation or other goal-oriented task or activity. The therapist may evaluate, analyze, and diagnose the cause and intervene with therapy to recover from or decrease the cause and help the person recover from or adjust to the limitation and help restore the ability to engage in an occupation or other activity. An occupational therapist may provide therapy without a referral from another provider or healthcare services. Occupational Therapy includes treating pain and rehabilitating a person to adjust to physical, neuromusculoskeletal, cognitive, psychosocial, visual, or other sensory perceptive aspects of performance in a variety of contexts to maintain their ability to engage in an occupation or other activity. Examples of activities of daily living can include sleep, rest, education, work, play, leisure, and other social participation. They also include basic essential functions, such as a person's ability to eat, feed themselves, and swallow. Therapists also design, fabricate, and apply assistive technology or adaptive or orthotic devices and train people to use the devices. Section 2 amends the definition of occupational therapy by removing previous descriptors such as, quote, developing skills, close quote, and, quote, facilitating, close quote, functioning in favor of the more definitive descriptive language in Section 1. Section 3 amends the definition of occupational therapy assistant from a person who assists in the practice of occupational therapy to one who administers or assists with administering therapy under the supervision of a licensed therapist. Section 4 adds a definition of tests and measurement to include imaging, electrodiagnostic, and electrophysiological, and other methods or techniques used to determine how to administer the therapy needed. I'm available to answer questions.
Okay. Are there questions? Representative Carey.
Thank you, through the co-chair. In Section 3, can you tell me how this change in language impacts the practice, if at all? For occupational therapy assistance.
And Mr. Co-Chair, we also have a couple of folks available to help answer questions who are subject matter experts if the need arises.
Should we hold that question and wait till after the invited testimony and then see if it still exists?
Sounds good.
Cool. Let's do that. All right. Let's do invited testimony.
Okay.
First invited testifier, Tori Doherty, Master of Science, Occupational Therapist, and Secretary of the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. Ms. Doherty, thank you for being here.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee members, for allowing me to speak today. For the record, my name is Tori Doherty, and I am an occupational therapist. I am testifying on behalf of the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board, as I am a member of this board. This board is our state's licensing board for OTs and OTAs, as well as PTs and PTAs. The board supports HB 347. The state board received a correspondence letter related to scope of practice in 2023, which led the board to request a law opinion. That law opinion highlighted a previously unrecognized but substantial limitation in Section 0884190, number 3, by identifying that the scope of practice fails to recognize OT's role in improving, enhancing, or recovering a patient's function. Alaskans deserve the opportunity to receive OT services consistent with basic national standards, and OT should assist a patient with improving their function. Currently, therapists are in an ethical conundrum. There seems to be two options to work with a shortcoming in scope of practice. So option one, they might adhere to their national standards of practice by providing high quality, strong patient care to improve the function of their Alaskan patients. And their Alaskan patients deserve that care. However, they would be working within a legal gray area based on the current law. Option two, if the therapists were prioritizing working within a black and white interpretation of the law, they would then be limited to suboptimal therapy services that do not help their patients recover or improve function. This scenario would not adhere to national best practice standards. HB 347 intends to correct the shortcomings and allow Alaskans to access strong, high-quality OT services consistent with national standards in other states. HB 347 achieves this through modernizing OT scope of practice. And then I heard prior to this meeting that committee members had a couple questions related to the differences between OTs and OTAs. So I'd like to anticipate that question and address it. Both OTs and OTAs are licensed in Alaska. Occupational therapists are autonomous practitioners who administer OT services independently and without supervision. OTAs receive supervision from the OT when delivering OT services. OTs are responsible for all aspects of OT service delivery, and they are accountable for the safety and effectiveness of OT services, even if it is the OTA that is providing the services. OTs have a higher level of education. They graduate with a master's degree or doctorate. OTAs graduate with an associate's degree or bachelor's. Both OTAs and OTRs take national board exams, and they're both licensed in Alaska. Through the chair, could I address Representative Carrick's question from earlier?
Yeah.
I believe you asked, like, what in the bill changes the role of an OTA? Is that accurate?
Through the chair, I was more wondering how the definition we're changing in Section 3 on therapy assistance, if in any way changes the practice. So we're making kind of a semantics change to the language. So I'm just wondering how that impacts, if anything, the practice for assistance.
Through the chair, this is Tori Daugherty for the record. In answer to Representative Carrick's question, when we originally drafted the language before legislative goal took a look at it, the section 0884095, letter D, was also in the same area as the question that you're raising. So this kind of move as a group together. What's happened as we watch practice evolve is that occupational therapy assistants have different roles than a physical therapist assistant. And on the state licensing board, we tend to have very strong, very powerful PT voices. And it's taken a lot of time and negotiation and learning and studying to help the PT component of the state licensing board understand that OTAs perform at a different level than PTAs. So the goal of this language overall is to protect the role of the OTA. The biggest component of that is that the occupational therapist opens a patient's evaluation, and then an OTA can come in and help to complete it. So they can administer some components of assessments and measures, bring those back to the occupational therapist, who then completes the evaluation. For the physical therapist assistants do not perform that extra step. And so this is really protecting in statute that role, so that that role doesn't become reduced or minimized over time. It just really, really protects it in statute.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, further, did you have any additional testimony you wanted to add, or is it time for questions?
I'm happy to take questions.
I had a question. Through the chair. So on the sponsor statement, they talked about needing this legislation because right now, the way it is right now, slows referrals. Can you elaborate on that? Why is that?
So in some levels, insurance is what it is. Our state statute doesn't change insurance. Right now, the licensing board recognizes that both occupational therapists and physical therapists are able to see a patient without a referral purely because nothing says they cannot do it. But this would put it in a statute and protect that, so that's very black and white, and they're able to do so. So in theory, if a patient were to fall down, sprain their wrist, they can go directly to occupational therapy to be treated. Mm-hmm. They don't need to go to their doctor, who can look at it and say, yes, you're right, your wrist hurts, now go to occupational therapy. They kind of skip that step and go directly to the therapist who will provide the treatment.
So follow up. So if you have more precise language, you're saying they wouldn't need the referral, right? They could go right to the occupational therapist?
Yes, for most insurances. And insurances will make their own requirements regardless of what statute says. But, yeah, from a licensing board perspective, the therapist would not need to have a referral for the patient to start care.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Daugherty. Next up in invited testimony is Jean Keckut, occupational therapist and clinical director of Alaska Hand Rehabilitation. Ms. Keckut is online, and please proceed.
Yes. Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jean Keckut. I have been a licensed occupational therapist for 31 years and have practiced in Alaska for 25 years. I'm here in support of House Bill 347 because Alaska's current occupational therapy statute is outdated and does not reflect modern healthcare practice. Right now, our law emphasizes helping patients cope with limitations, but it does not clearly recognize our role in restoring and rehabilitating function. That gap creates regulatory confusion and places Alaska out of alignment with national standards. In a healthcare system already facing workforce shortages and access challenges, unclear scope language creates unnecessary barriers to timely care. In a rural state like ours, delays in rehabilitation can mean prolonged disability, delayed return to work, and higher long-term costs. Patients recovering from injury need clear access to restorative care, and providers need clarity and statute to practice safely and competently within their training. HB 347 addresses that gap. It updates outdated language so Alaska patients are not underserved simply because our statute has not kept pace with healthcare evolution. This bill is about ensuring that Alaskans have access to modern, evidence-based occupational therapy care consistent with national standards. Thank you, and I respectfully ask for your support.
Okay. Are there questions for Ms. Kekut? Are there further questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. Next up in invited testimony is Celeste Tedinko.
Pretty close.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
So thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Co-Chair Fields. My name for the record is M. Celeste Tidico, and I have been an occupational therapist in Alaska for about 23 years, only in Alaska, and I have served on the licensing board. I serve for our national organization on the Political Action Committee, and currently I am the NBCOT, which is our national licensing organization. I am the ambassador for Alaska. And I want to tell you why this is very important to me. And it's important to me in three ways specifically. First, it aligns Alaska's OT Practice Act more closely with the modern standards of care. It clearly describes services that are already part of standard OT education and practice. OTs not only help our patients cope, but as you've also heard today, that we also restore, rehabilitate, and enhance function after injury, illness, disability, or decline. This allows Alaska's OTs the opportunity to practice at the top of our license. Second, HB 347 improves access and timeliness of care by removing ambiguity that can slow referrals and necessary treatment. Clear scope language helps patients move more quickly from diagnosis or injury to the hands-on therapy that restores function in daily life. This can mean faster rehabilitation after surgery or stroke, fewer delays that can prolong disability, and possibly the reduced need for long-distance travel. And I live in a remote area, so that is very important to us. When services can be provided more effectively and efficiently in local settings. And third, HB 347 is a practical response to the need to remove confusion, and it clearly describes services that are already part of standard occupational therapy education and practice. By modernizing and clarifying the statute, occupational therapy is more fully able to contribute our expertise alongside our potential multidisciplinary partners, such as physicians, nurses, physical therapists, speech-language pathologists, and other providers.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Tedinko, for testifying. Are there questions? Seeing none, are there questions for the bill sponsor?
Yeah, I have questions for
the bill sponsor.
I think this is for the bill sponsor. Maybe somebody knows. So on page 3, looks like you're removing for compensation, but I felt, does this help with compensation or insurance, or I guess what's the reason for taking that out?
Representative Colomb, through the co-chair, Representative Fall, for the record, I will need a lifeline for that.
Okay.
And it appears that Ms. Doherty can shed some light on that.
Through the chair, this is Tori Daugherty for the record. In answer to our question, for compensation implies that a person is only performing occupational therapy if they're being paid to do that work. As a licensing board, sometimes we have individuals from out of state who want to come into Alaska without an occupational therapy license, but treat Alaskans because they're doing volunteer work or mission work. And the goal is to really ensure that when somebody comes to the state, treats Alaskans, they are well vetted and fully qualified to treat those patients by being licensed.
Okay. Okay, so a follow up?
Yes.
So is it only, so if you volunteer, you can come into Alaska without a license and be an OT?
Through the chair, in answer to Representative Colomb's question, this is Daugherty for the record. At this time, we are asking those individuals to obtain unlimited permits.
Oh.
So there's the option as an occupational therapist to receive up to 2 limited permits in their lifetime, and it limits the number of days that they're able to practice occupational therapy. For those individuals who want to do volunteer work, it's a low-cost option, and it doesn't require a full board vote to be approved. And so the licensing examiner is able to approve those limited permits very, very quickly. So if there were to be a disaster response, if there were to be a big volunteer need, we're able to get those approved very, very quickly.
Okay, so but you're a follow-up. It's okay. So by removing this, you're just making sure that the volunteers are included in the scope of practice, basically.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The goal is to reaffirm that it is occupational therapy, regardless of whether or not you're billing for your services. If you have an occupational therapy degree, if you're treating these patients, then you need to meet qualifications to treat Alaskans. Okay. Otherwise, the risk is that you might have not full-fledged providers coming to the state and providing unsafe care to Alaskans.
Okay, that makes sense. I have another question, but I can defer. Wait.
Okay, go ahead, Rep. Freer.
Thank you. Through co-chair Fields to Ms. Doherty, a question about licensure and I suppose education requirements and pathways for folks who earned their degrees internationally and what, I guess, what pathways they have for licensure.
Yes. Through the chair, this is Doherty. In answer to Representative Freer's question, so there's a national process. It's through NBCOT. That's where we take our national board exams, and it's called OTED, O-T-E-D. And when somebody is coming into the state as an internationally trained OT, they need to go through that OTED process in order to confirm that their credentials, so their schooling, their fieldwork placements, are equivalent to the training that someone living in the U.S. has received. That national process is only available for occupational therapists. It is not available for occupational therapy assistants. So an occupational therapist is able to become licensed in Alaska if they're trained internationally and they meet those criteria, but not if they're an OTA, which is very uncommon.
Thank you.
Sure. Rep. Kalam.
Yeah, through the chair. So mine's a little bit, it's around licensing, and I'm not sure who can answer this, but I assume there's another section of statute that shows licensure. So, and there's no changes to it. So this scope of practice doesn't change anything about getting licensed?
Through the chair, in answer to Representative Colomb's question, this is Daugherty. No, there's no changes to the actual process of becoming licensed.
Okay.
This is only addressing scope of practice. Mm-hmm. So once somebody is licensed, what services are they able to perform?
So you follow up? So so you don't feel like the licensing part of statute needs updating at all?
Through the chair, there would be a separate project. If there is a section that requires updating in statute, then that would just be a separate bill.
Okay.
This project grew from limitations in scope of practice that were directly impacting patient care.
Okay.
And so the priority was to address those patient care needs quickly. As part of AO360, the licensing board did take a really deep look at the licensure regulations. We couldn't change statute, but there were a lot of changes made to regulations. And then there were recommendations to Department of Law for ways in which we can increase internationally trained OT access to become licensed in Alaska as well. But those are currently being reviewed by Department of Law.
Okay. All right, great. Cool. Thank you.
Representative Nelson joined us at 4:35. Are there further questions? Okay. The amendment deadline for this bill will be Thursday, 3/19 at 5 p.m. Next up is HJR 38, Public Safety Communications by Co-Chair Hall. We heard this bill for the first time last Friday and set an amendment deadline for earlier this week. We did not receive any amendments. Co-Chair Hall, do you want to recap what this bill does?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Happy to. For the record, my name is Carolyn Hall, House District 16. I represent West Anchorage neighborhoods of Turney and Spinard and Sand Lake. HJR 38, if passed, urges Congress to pass federal legislation that reclassifies emergency response dispatchers from essentially a clerical classification to a peace officer form of classification. Currently, there's a bill, the Enhancing First Response Act, that passed the Senate somewhat recently and is now awaiting the House of Representatives, U.S. House of Representatives consideration. There's also, and on that piece of legislation, Senator Dan Sullivan co-sponsored it, and then additionally, there's another piece of legislation in the U.S. House of Representatives that U.S. Representative Nick Begich just recently co-sponsored, and that is the 911 Saves Act. So either one of those pieces of legislation addresses and updates this classification for emergency response dispatchers. excuse me. The reason why this is important is because public safety emergency response dispatchers, often called or sometimes called public safety telecommunicators, but just for the committee, for the committee's purpose, I'm just going to say emergency response dispatchers. Their occupation has evolved over the last 50, 60 years to where initially when they were put into service, someone like me could have done this job with almost no training. And what I would do is if someone called 911 for help, I would answer the phone and say, oh, you're in trouble at C Street and, 36. Let me get someone to go to you to help you. And that would be the extent of the phone call. Over the course of time and evolution of the profession, it has evolved with increased training to the level of being similar to their EMS colleagues, so they are able to walk callers through when they're in emergency and help them as best they can by walking them through life-saving instructions. And so the job has really evolved over the course of the decades. And so what HJR 38 aims to do is, with this reclassification, if it goes through, it means that these emergency response dispatchers will have access to similar benefits that their first responder colleagues currently have access to. And that includes training, access to federal grants, things of that nature. So with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions that the committee may have.
Okay, I don't see any questions. At this time, I will open public testimony. Looks like I don't see anyone in the room for public testimony, so online, James Bullock, please proceed with your public testimony.
How's it going? Thank you all, committee members, for giving me the ability to speak here today. I've been an emergency dispatcher for the University of Alaska Fairbanks Police Department for almost 10 years now. And I urge you to support HJR 38 so that public safety dispatchers are officially recognized as first responders. Reclassification to a protective service occupation will help all public safety dispatchers gain access to some of the same benefits available to other first responders. This is critical to improving both recruitment and retention. During my time as an emergency dispatcher, I have responded to fires, vehicle accidents, medical emergencies, disturbances, shootings, suicides, and missing person cases. So many different calls and different types of calls that I could write a book. And as the first person responding to an incident, I've provided life safety assistance to callers, victims, bystanders, both fire and police personnel, and even suspects. The thing is, my story is not unique. Every single public safety dispatcher nationwide has a story in which they have provided life-saving assistance. And if they haven't done it yet, it's only because they haven't been on the job long enough, but it's going to happen for them most likely in the very near future. Beyond the nature of the calls, please consider the stress that we endure every day. Every single incident requires a high level of stress management that builds upon a person over time. Our level of accuracy and clarity must be up 100%. Lives depend on that. We have to collect precise information while simultaneously relaying clear instructions. We must maintain our composure because as the first person responding to an incident, we are rendering aid through instruction, assistance, communication, and coordination. While our boots may not be on the ground, we are very much on scene and rendering aid long before anybody else arrives. So the question for all this really should not be whether public safety dispatchers are first responders or not. The answer to that is obvious. The question should be is, why haven't we recognized them as such already? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bullock. Next up is Nick Davis. Go ahead, Mr. Davis.
Okay. Thank you very much for hearing my testimony. My name is Nick Davis. I'm calling on behalf of a volunteer firefighter from Seldovia, Alaska. I've also worked on the slope. I've been dispatched as a first responder through the university system, MATCOM, Anchorage, and the Southern Kenai Peninsula dispatch system. And I really want to emphasize that our dispatchers are much more than a clerical person. They are actually part of the team, and they are like the quarterback. And they're that first person that gets the ball, receives the call, initiates the play, initiates the plan. And without that, it would be nearly impossible at this time to really respond in a level that's appropriate for our community. And so that's what I'm calling for, is to really emphasize that they are one of us as a first responder. And I'm hoping that this resolution is passed forward to Congress. Thank you. And I got a 911 call. I got to go on.
Okay. Thanks, yeah. Mr. Davis. I don't see any more public testimony, so I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. Brief at ease. Back on the record, Co-Chair Hall, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move to report HJR 38, Work Order 34-LS1502/A out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, HJR 38 does pass out of committee. Let's see. We had a number of governor's appointees who appear to be missing. What's that?
We've got to reschedule.
Okay. We will seek to locate these people and invite them to another meeting. So with that, at 3:52, this committee meeting is adjourned.